Chapter 16.
Take a deep breath,
Syra urged me, and the chocolate-skinned summoner began to rub my back in rhythmic circles.
Please, Griff, you're starting to scare me.
Sorry, Syra, I apologized, and then I did exactly as my curly-haired wife instructed and took long, deep breaths. As I took steps to try to relax, Layla and Aaron finally awoke, and each of them realized something was wrong straight away.
What's going on?
Aaron demanded as her sleepy amber eyes moved between Syra and me.
Griff, are you all right?
Bad dream, I managed to say as Syra continued to run her fingers along my spine. With every circle she traced, my tension began to ease, and the heaviness in my chest began to grow more tolerable.
Oh, Griffy, I'm so sorry,
Layla frowned, and she rested her warm hand on my arm.
Nightmares are the worst. I don't think it was just a normal nightmare,
Syra explained in a quiet voice, and the petite mage froze in place.
Now, Griff, try to settle down, and then I want you to repeat what you said to me a moment ago.
I'm sorry?
No, not that,
my dark-skinned lover sighed.
About the dream. It was a demon dream, wasn't it?
Aaron whispered, as if she didn't want to know the answer, and I couldn't quite bring myself to explain what had happened. So I answered her question with a short nod as I continued to steady myself.
I make it, that's not good,
Layla groaned.
Whenever there's a demon dream, that usually leads to things going from bad to even fucking worse. Griff, what happened in the dream?
Aaron followed up, but Syra gently shushed her and Layla.
Give him a minute,
she urged the pair, and the mages nodded their heads as they sat back to give us space. After a few minutes of silence, I managed to calm the spinning sensation in my head and think a little more rationally. I was still in the earlier stages of absorbing the information, but my body felt much less out of control and more my own than it had when I'd first awakened. I'm okay, I assured my women as soon as I found my voice again. I'm sorry for scaring you and waking you up so suddenly.
Don't be sorry,
Layla insisted as she leaned into me and rested her cheek against my arm.
We were just worried about you, Griffy. You were as white as a sheet, and for a second, I thought you were going to pass out.
So did I, I admitted to the petite mage, and my three lovers pulled me into a loose-armed embrace. As I snuggled into them, I tried to make sense of what to do next. The rest of our friends and family needed to know what I'd heard and seen, so the only option I could think of was to gather them all and try to rationally explain my thought process. It was clear time was of the essence, and the longer I delayed, the worse things would be. We need to wake everyone up, I made a sweeping declaration. I know it's late and everyone else is asleep, but this can't wait. I need all of the guardians present, and that includes you as well, Aaron. I know you consider yourself a guardian adjacent, but to me, you're still a major part of the team, and I want you there with us for this conversation.
I'll be there,
Aaron swore, and then she inclined her head toward the door.
Shall we?
We all climbed out of bed, and after my women and I got dressed, we split up and set out to wake up the rest of the house, aside from Nerissa, Maddie, and the children. Vala was still with her parents in the war camp, but Freya swore she would repeat whatever was said to her younger sister as soon as possible. At Arwen's suggestion, we'd decided to use her bathroom study as the location for our meeting, and the crimson-haired healer, with Nia's help, lit a blazing fire in the black brick fireplace to help warm the space. Once the temperature began to rise, my wives sat down on one of the empty couches and huddled together in anticipation. I caught myself pacing back and forth in front of the fire as I waited for everyone to gather and sit, and it took all of my willpower to present a calmer front, especially after getting a glimpse out of the floor-to-ceiling windows of Arwen's study. Just as Azraneth had warned, it was clear to see the demon's hold over our planet had increased tenfold. The sterling grayscape beyond us was black, but not the same type as a normal night sky. There was something more unnatural about this darkness, almost like it was a shade of black mortal eyes had never witnessed before. This was deeper than that, so much that I almost felt as if I was falling as I stared up at it. The darkness of the sky made the moon seem even redder than before, and it glowed like a radiant jewel in the middle of the pitch-black nothingness. Even darker still were the outlines of Azraneath's tentacles, which had stopped writhing and grown incredibly still.
"Griff, what's this about?"
Gawain wondered as he rubbed his bleary emerald eyes. The whites were slightly red with irritation, and his normally immaculately combed golden hair was ruffled and sticking out in several directions.
"Yeah, Griff, what's going on?"
Brayden yawned and stretched his arms above his head.
"It's almost 3 in the morning.
I'm sorry to have woken you up at this hour, but this couldn't wait," I explained. "There's no time for me to be diplomatic or professional about this, so I'll just come right out and say it to you all directly. Azraneath spoke to me in a dream, and we're running out of time. We're going to have to take action, and we need to do it quickly."
"The demon spoke to you?"
Nia's eyebrows rose high onto her face.
"Griff, what did it say?
And what did it look like?"
Layla wondered with an expression that was both curious and horrified.
"Was it all tentacly and—"
"Focus, Bethel,"
Almasi reminded the petite mage gently.
"Sorry,"
she apologized, and then she turned to me.
"Griffy?"
The demon didn't appear to me in a physical form, just as a disembodied voice. I answered her. As for what it said, it wasn't very much, but it was enough to make it glaringly obvious that we need to act. I don't think we have long until the demon unleashes its army and drains the planet dry.
"Micah,"
Varlith cursed as he sat forward and placed his chin in his hands.
"This is really happening, isn't it? The final battle?"
"It is," I confirmed. "Trust me, I'm feeling the exact same as the rest of you. I knew our battle against the demon was going to be soon, but I figured we had weeks, if not a month, before we would have to get to the moon. Unfortunately, our timeline is much shorter than that, so I think it's time we finally start discussing strategy. With Azraneath's warning and the current trajectory of the sky's shift, I'd say we've only got a few days at the most before things go from bad to even worse. We can't sit around and wait for that to happen."
"No, we can't,"
Orin agreed with a firm nod of his balding head. "So, Ashla, if you wouldn't mind sharing the blueprints you drafted for the breathing apparatuses—" I began, and the Ice Mage leapt to her feet before I could utter another word.
"I can do one better,"
she declared as she tossed her braids behind her shoulders, and then she hastily ran out of the room. We all sat there in silence as we waited for the dark-skinned former mercenary to return, and it was only interrupted when Orin let out an impressively loud yawn. When everyone turned their heads to stare at him, the Metalog offered an apologetic smile.
"Sorry," he muttered.
When Ashla re-emerged a few minutes later, she held the same helmet as the one from her blueprints, and my jaw dropped ever so slightly. The helmet she'd designed was even more sleek and high-tech looking than I'd expected. It was a deep metallic gray, and incredibly shiny with a slight shimmer to it. Both sides of the facial gear were decorated with two wire lines that ran from the top of the helmet to the bottom. The inlaid wires pulsed and glowed with bright green light, and I found myself mesmerized by the movement.
"Whoa, Ashla, that's amazing!"
Almasi praised the former mercenary with an awestruck look on his sleepy face.
"Thank you,"
she nodded at our friend.
"You designed this,"
Gawain clarified.
"Sure did,"
the dark-skinned mage nodded with confidence.
"I knew us traveling up to the moon was inevitable, and as such, I designed these helmets and the suits that accompany them."
"There are suits too?" I asked in surprise.
"What kind of inventor would I be if I made helmets without a suit?"
Ashla giggled.
"Now, for the sake of keeping everyone conscious and engaged, I'll spare you the scientific explanations for how these work. Long story short, it's taken me quite a bit of time, magic and tech research. but I've developed these helmets to help us breathe while we're up on the moon. They'll take a little bit of getting used to, but I've managed to craft them with a material that is both protective and lightweight, so we won't feel weighted down as we travel.
May I? Gawain asked,
and my dark-haired lover passed the helmet over to the fire mage.
Go ahead,
Ashla encouraged him, and Gawain examined the helmet with extreme interest.
The glowing parts are interesting to watch, but do they mean anything?
Syra wondered.
Originally, I included them in the installation so we could easily find each other if we were separated, or in an area with low light,
Ashla explained, and then her full lips formed a shy grin.
But between us, they also look really cool. And the helmets attached to the suits?
Gawain clarified as he passed the helmet over to Varlith.
Yes,
the former mercenary confirmed.
They're attached by a set of latches around the helmet's base. And once they're on, they're locked in place. The only way they can come off is by pressing the release button I've tucked into the center of the suit's right cuff.
Interesting,
Orin assessed with a huge grin on his broad face.
But why the cuff?
I think it's safe to say Azraneath won't be alone up there,
Ashla answered in a serious tone.
In the event we have to fight against monsters or other minions, I don't want our enemies to accidentally hit the release button and send our helmets flying. So I placed it in a discreet location that isn't likely to be struck. Combined with a set of cybernetic matching gloves, there's little risk of error.
That was a really smart idea, Ashla. I complimented her as the helmet ended up in my hands. Thank you for taking initiative on this.
Of course.
She nodded.
I figured getting a head start on the project would be a good idea. And besides, I know this will sound really lame to admit, but I had fun developing the idea.
So now that we have the subject of gear settled, let's start developing the plan to physically get up to the moon, I said. Before I weigh in with my ideas, do the rest of you have any suggestions? I was met with a room full of silence, and when my eyes trailed over my friends, I could see the looks of concern on their faces.
Well, Aaron and I have been discussing the idea of an aircraft, but we didn't reach a positive conclusion,
Arwen sighed.
The type of vessels we have at our disposal don't have the capability of reaching that type of altitude, and since no living mage or military figure has ever travelled past the atmosphere, we'd be taking a huge gamble that doesn't seem worth the risk.
I wish there was a way to know how the Guardians of the Past made their way up to the Tentacles, I sighed. Unfortunately, the history book wasn't clear on how they managed to travel up there in the first place.
Yeah, we've combed through every last inch of the book, and unless there's another hidden portion like Arwen uncovered, there's no mention of the Guardians,
Ashla said.
So, we're on our own.
Varlith nodded his head slowly.
That's all right. I know it would be so much more helpful to have help from the past, but that's never stopped us before. Perhaps if we survive this thing, you should consider becoming a motivational speaker, Prost.
Gawain teased his friend, and after the surly banisher's face flushed red, he reached out and punched the fire mage in the arm.
Hoss it, Maddox!
Varlith rolled his dark brown eyes.
I'm just trying to be positive.
There really is a first time for everything, isn't there? I joked, which earned me my own punch to the arm.
All right, boys, let's focus, shall we?
Layla suggested with a giggle.
We have a big old demon guy whose ass we gotta kick and no way to get up there. So, aircraft is out,
Syra summed it up.
How about monsters? Between Griff, Braden, Layla and me, we have plenty of flying summons. Would they be able to make that trip?
It's hard to say, I said. That's not a terrible idea, but once again, it comes down to altitude. None of us have ever flown any of our monsters that high before, and I'd be worried about their breathing capabilities. I could see my pyroworm being able to handle it, but that's only because it's featureless.
What if you're arcing with the shape-shifting power used in magic to alter our monsters?
Layla proposed, and then she tapped her finger to her chin in consideration.
Which one has that ability again? Viopa?
Viopa. I nodded. And that's not a bad idea, honestly.
Yes!
Layla pumped her fist in the air.
Before you celebrate a premature victory, Bethel, we have to think about what type of alterations that could mean,
Brayden pointed out in a half-teasing, half-serious voice.
The bigger the monster, the more air intake it needs. And then with the additional weight of multiple people, I'm still not sure they could handle it.
Thanks for the biology lesson, Professor Brayden.
The petite summoner rolled her enormous eyes.
I don't hear you offering any solutions.
Brayden has a point, Layla, I admitted, but only to manipulate size. I'm not sure if shifting entire organ systems is included in that. We could seriously hurt our monsters if we do the wrong thing, and I don't want to realize that fact when we're thousands of feet above the Enclave.
Oh,
Layla sighed.
I suppose that's true. Well, since monsters and aircraft are officially not going to work, I think the floor is all yours, Griff,
Nia suggested, and then she waved me forward. Okay, I nodded. Well, I've been thinking a little about all of the possibilities, and even though we don't know how the Guardians of the Past managed space travel, we have an asset they didn't, an Arkin with teleportation abilities.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Nia's eyes widened.
Is that even a possibility? Has Sarah opened a portal so far away before?
Well, she's managed to flit between the realms without problem, I answered. This would be a much larger ask.
Could we speak with her?
Arwen proposed, and when all eyes fell to her, she raised her hands up defensively.
I think at this point we're all well-seasoned when it comes to interactions with the goddesses, and I think it would be easier on both us and Griff if Sarah could join us in the physical world.
I can make that happen, I nodded, and I reached into my mind and called out to the Raven Wing at Arkin. Sarah, how are you feeling?
Wonderful,
my lover replied in an energetic tone.
Xanrath has restored me back to full health, and I'm feeling back to my usual self.
I'm glad to hear it, I said earnestly. I know you're still in the recovering process, but my friends and I would like to speak with you. Are you well enough for me to summon you forth?
Your wish is my command, Master,
Sarah interjected, and then my back immediately began to tingle as the Arkin manifested in the middle of the study. I noticed a couple of my friends stiffen up as the dark winged goddess appeared, namely Varlith and Gawain, but the pair got a hold of themselves before anyone else could catch on.
Hello, Sarah,
Arwen greeted the raven-haired Arkin with a dazzling smile.
Thank you for joining us here. Of course,
Sarah replied, and when her cat-like eyes fell to Arwen's slightly swollen abdomen, she gave a small smile, but then refocused immediately.
How may I be of assistance?
We have a big favor to ask of you, but before we do, we need to first ask if the request is even physically possible, I began. If it isn't, we'll find a way to work around.
What is the task?
My lover interrupted before I could finish, and she raised her chin slightly.
Whatever it is, I am certain I can help bring it to fruition. You only need to ask.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, but please, let us explain first, I said. Sarah, this is a large ask, especially after everything you've accomplished during our mission to the southern continent, but we're in need of your portal capabilities once again.
Are you asking if it's possible for me to teleport you up to the moon?
The Arkin raised a delicately arched eyebrow. Yes, I confirmed, and I was met with complete silence.
I may have been too cocky when I promised to fulfill whatever request you had for me,
Sarah admitted in a small voice, and her elegant black wings drooped down ever so slightly. If you can't...
I'm not completely incapable,
the Arkin began slowly.
I simply don't know if my magic has that sort of reach. I've never attempted to open up a portal that surpasses the atmosphere before. The Shadowscape is one thing, but I've never attempted to leave the planet. Attempting a test run beforehand isn't an option, is it?
Arwen wondered, and Sarah shook her head.
I wish it were, but even I have to admit it would inflict major damage to my magic,
she said, and she crossed her arms against her chest as she began to slowly pace the room.
I would feel more comfortable if I could complete a trial beforehand. But I'd be worried I wouldn't be able to manage a second attempt if I tried.
We don't want that either, I stressed, and I tapped my finger to my chin as I considered the options we had before us. This isn't ideal, but do you think your reach can extend to the demon's tentacles at least? The Guardians of the Past mentioned they managed to reach the moon by first arriving at the demon's tentacles. So maybe you can open up a portal, and we could continue on the rest of the way.
That has the potential to be a very long journey,
Arwen warned me. If we were leaving this mission to normal mages, that would be an issue. But we're the Guardians for a reason, I pointed out to the healer mage. Between all of our various magics and monsters, I think we can work out a way to increase our physical speed.
Of course, my red-headed wife agreed with me, and then she turned to the dark-winged Arkan. Sarah, does any of that sound possible?
I think it could work, Sarah considered. I could try to get you as close to the moon as possible, but without knowing exactly how long the demon's tentacles span in comparison, I'm afraid it'll be a little further than you'd prefer.
As long as you can get us up there, I don't think it matters, I assured her. A portal to the tentacles is more than enough.
Definitely, Ashla agreed. A portal spares us the trouble of finding another transportation. Then I will do my best to make it a reality, Sarah confirmed, and then she fixed her yellow-eyed gaze on me. Now, Master, when do you intend to leave Mistral? Tonight? Tomorrow? There's no way we're going tonight,
Nia spoke up, and I could practically see the gears of her mind whirring like a top.
Granted, I don't even know if we could pull it off tomorrow. If you're worried about the childcare aspect of the situation, don't be.
Aaron spoke up.
I'm more than prepared to step up and handle everything around here. Besides, I have Nerissa and Matty to help me out. That's why we're here in the first place.
Aaron, are you sure? I began to ask, but she cut me off with a wave of her hand.
I wouldn't have offered if I wasn't sure,
the mimic insisted in a firm voice.
Leave the children to us. We'll make sure everything is perfect and our family is well taken care of while you guys are handling the demon.
Thank you, I said, and I offered my orange-haired girlfriend an earnest smile. I appreciate you stepping up and caring for our family in our absence.
It's no trouble at all,
Aaron assured me with a smile of her own.
My husband, I have a question.
Freya spoke up as she crossed her arms against her chest.
Once your goddesses take us to the moon, what exactly happens next? Will we be able to stand firmly on the ground? And how long will it take for us to move from tentacle over to the moon? Those tendrils span the entire length of the sky, so I don't suspect the journey is going to go half as quickly as we anticipate.
The Hawk Princess's hands shook while she spoke, and it reminded me that even though she was a badass warrior, she still had some qualms revolving around monsters and magic in general. I don't have a definite answer, but those are great questions, I remarked. You bring up a great point about the duration of travel. I honestly have no idea how long traversing the tentacles is going to take, but you're right about it taking longer than what we want it to. That's something we're going to have to keep in mind once we get up there. The longer it takes us to travel from the tentacle to the surface of the moon, the less time we have until Azraneath drains the world dry.
So, what you're saying is, we should have teleported up to the tentacles like 2 weeks ago?
Layla wondered. 2 weeks ago, we didn't have the aid of the southern armies, I reminded the auburn-haired mage.
Right,
she admitted in a reluctant voice.
That's a good point.
I know this question isn't going to be too easy to answer when we have no idea what to expect, but how are we actually planning on staying locked down to the surface of the tentacle?
Varlith asked, and he tiredly rested his chin in his hands.
What do you mean by that?
Layla wondered with a tilt of her chin. He means how do we keep stable while we're walking, I said, and then I turned to Ashla. Ashla, does your suit have any type of adaptation that will allow us to cling to the tentacle without getting stuck to it completely?
No.
Ashla shook her head in disappointment.
That's the only thing I haven't been able to figure out on my own. I was so worried about the air supply system that I neglected the existence of an anchoring apparatus.
Maker, Orin cursed. That's a definite complication. Not one that's yours, of course, Ashla.
Oh, no, I'm completely blaming myself on this one.
The Ice Mage sighed.
Hey, don't fret, I insisted. There's got to be something I can do.
Maybe one of our monsters will have some kind of ability that could help anchor us to the surface without exhausting too much energy.
For all of us six, I hope it's one of yours,
Cyrus said as she tugged at one of her curls.
I don't think I have anything like that in my arsenal. What about Kristen?
Layla proposed.
Does she have a monster with some kind of sticky ability? Maybe something with a killer grip? I know she's been gone on a mission for the Grand Mage, but maybe we could track her down before we leave.
I don't know, I replied truthfully. I also don't think we're going to have the time to reach her. We need to leave immediately tomorrow. Brayden considered, and he tapped his finger against his chin as his mind fell deep in thought.
As for the monsters, I'm not really sure I have much in my arsenal. I adore my King Griffin, but aside from flight and raw strength, the Chimera might, but I haven't worked with her enough to know.
My Hippocrines and my Ketchum are out too,
Layla decided.
They're strong, but they're not suited for what we need. Syra, what about you? Do you have any sneaky friends in that belt of yours that might guide us down the right path?
No.
The dark-skinned summoner shook her head after she rooted through her crystal-laden belt.
Between the Petripede and Kalon, I think I'm screwed.
That leaves you, farm boy.
Nia prompted me, and her sapphire eyes locked on mine.
You have the most monsters of anyone here.
Not to mention the Arkins monsters,
Varlith reminded me.
9 Arkins times 3 monsters each.
I'm not a mathematician, but those sound like impressive numbers.
Layla mused as she twirled a lock of auburn hair around her finger. I think I have an idea, I said after considering each of my summons. Creature wasn't one I used fairly often, but I was disappointed in myself for forgetting it so quickly. It was a monster known as Guari Kira, a monster that physically appeared to be a hybrid between a gorilla and a sloth. It had the ability to draw metal objects toward itself. There was a lot of science involved when it came to biology and space that I didn't fully understand, but I wondered if I would be able to borrow the Guari Kira's magnetic attraction magic and pass it along to me and my fellow guardians to keep us from potentially floating off into space. I proposed the idea to my friends, and each of them seemed at least somewhat interested in the idea.
I never would have thought to use the Guari Kira, but that's an excellent idea, Griff.
Arwen commended me with a brilliant smile.
If there's at least any amount of iron in the demon's body, your monster's magnetic ability should be able to attract it.
Cool,
Layla remarked.
If the tentacles aren't metallic, your arachnus might also work, Griff.
Nia suggested.
Her webbing is really sticky.
Ah, you're right, I said. Nice thinking, Nia. Either way, be it the Guari Kira or the arachnus, I'll apply the magic to the bottom of our boots, and that should keep us locked in place until we reach the moon. Once we step off the tentacle, I'll reassess and see if the magic is still necessary to maintain.
Excellent,
Arwen replied, and the rest of my friends let out similar sounds of agreement.
Next question we need to address, Almasi began, and the Earth Mage rose from his seat and began to pace slightly.
Our eyes followed him as he moved around the room, and when he finally leaned up against the desk, my heart rate was slightly elevated from the anticipation.
So, we get onto the tentacle. We travel along it until we reach the surface of the moon. What happens from there?
We kick the demon's ass.
Layla rolled her eyes, and then she placed her hands on her slim hips.
Duh.
Very astute, Bethel.
Gawain sighed, and he crossed his arms against his chest.
Okay, it's way too late in the night for you to be using words like astute, Gawain.
My girlfriend tossed her head back and groaned.
You know what I meant.
I think what Almossi is getting at is how exactly are we going to fight a monster large enough to span the surface of the moon?
Brayden spoke up.
Which is a fair question.
We won't know what we're dealing with until we get there, I answered. I know that's not what anyone wants to hear, but it's the truth. We can sit here and speculate how this final battle against Azraneath is going to go, and how it's going to be, but the fact of the matter is, we have no clue how this is going to play out, especially when it comes to the battle itself. I don't know if we're going to be fighting against a gigantic entity, or if there's another form the demon will take. I just don't know. We're going to have to pull out the big guns on this one, so we need to make sure we're prepared. For anyone who uses monsters, you need to bring your most powerful crystals, even if you've never used them before.
This is definitely going to require all of the effort you can muster,
Sarah agreed with me, and then she addressed the entire group.
This battle is going to be the most challenging ones of your lives, but I know you're capable of handling it. Thank you for the encouragement, Sarah.
Nia thanked the dark-winged goddess.
It really means a lot to us. Of course,
Sarah confirmed. And after the goddess and I shared a brief look of understanding, I recalled her to my mind, and then turned my attention back to my friends and family. Now that we've talked everything out and devised a rough strategy, I think it would be advantageous to head back to our rooms and attempt to get some sleep, I proposed. Tomorrow is going to go much faster than we're ready for, and we need to be on high alert.
If you think we have time to rest, then I propose we get to bed straight away,
Arwen agreed with me.
If this plays out in the way we anticipate, we likely aren't going to have another long night of rest anytime soon, so we need to enjoy it while we can.
Enjoy is probably going to be a little loose of a description, but Arwen's right, I addressed the group.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Orin mock saluted me, and everyone broke into a tired round of laughter. We said our goodnights and parted ways after that, and as I moved down the corridor, I felt like I was slogging through a thick, viscous liquid. Each step I took felt harder than the next, and I couldn't believe just how tired I was physically, when mentally, I felt as if I'd just been electrocuted. My mind was in so many different places, and I wasn't sure what to focus on. The timeline of this fight kept getting pushed up, and the more time we lost, the more unprepared I felt. I wanted to get this entire thing over with already, but I still had no clue how we were going to accomplish it. Grand Mage was being torn in too many directions, so I was the bridge between the Mistral Army and the ones of the southern continent. Lisi, Ayun, and the clan chiefs were mostly self-sufficient. But what was going to happen when I had to depart? Would they still continue to work together? I stopped by the third-floor bathrooms and allowed myself a moment to splash some water on my face and calm down. Once I was fully relaxed, and the pins and needles sensation disappeared from my body, I descended the stairs and made my way back to my bedroom. Then I opened the door and was surprised by the sight of each of my women curled up in one another wearing little to no clothing at all. Wow, I whistled. Whatever happened to the get-some-rest plan?
We decided this would be more fun,
Layla waggled her eyebrows suggestively.
Besides, it's a little chilly in this house.
Nia bit her full lower lip and then patted the centermost part of the bed, where a single spot had been left for me.
We left you some room. Care to warm us up?
I don't deserve any of you, I chuckled. And without further delay, I climbed into the pile of gorgeous mages and allowed myself to be enveloped in their warm embrace. Tomorrow was going to be an entirely jam-packed day, and there was no telling when I would be able to find restful sleep in the near future. So I needed to attempt to get as much as I could now, and attempt to store it away, like some sort of hibernating animal. While I managed to get a decent amount of sleep that night, I woke up the next morning feeling as if I hadn't slept at all. The impending doom of the situation began to weigh on me from the moment my mind started to rouse, but I managed to thwart the negativity before it could get too impossible to overcome. With how much needed to be done and prepared, there was no use getting stressed out, so I steadied my heart rate and carefully sat up in bed. The rest of my women were fast asleep, so my maneuver required expert skill. But I somehow found a way to untangle from the cuddle nest and sneak over the edge of the bed. I managed to make it upstairs without running into anyone, and I relished in the quietness of the morning while I could. Things were about to get incredibly complicated, and it was nice to have a bit of peace beforehand, no matter how fleeting the moment was. By the time I finished showering and dressing myself for the day, I stepped into the nursery to find my women were already up and alert, minus Layla, whose pixie-like eyes were more downturned than usual as she rocked Daphne in her arms.
Maker, why can't that demon thing give us threats during the day?
She yawned.
Fucking inconsiderate tentacle blob. Hey, not in front of the children,
Nia teased her. But the petite mage wasn't in the mood to play along.
Yeah, Daphne has and will probably hear worse coming out of this mouth.
The petite mage smirked, and her hazel-eyed infant clone let out a giggle, as if in agreement with her mother.
So, what's first on the agenda?
Syra wondered as she bottle-fed Milo. Our curly-haired son was high energy this morning, so her efforts didn't have the same ease as usual, and I resisted the urge to laugh as Milo ducked every advance of the bottle.
That's a great question,
I admitted as I crossed over to her and attempted to help ease our son into his breakfast. When Milo finally latched onto the bottle, he let out a soft sigh and then closed his eyes as he began to drink. With the Grand Mage still in Hartmire, we have a few difficulties ahead. Not only do we need to get up to the moon as soon as possible, but we also need to get word to Sleet, the Southern Armies, and the rest of our ground forces. They need to know things are about to go from bad to even worse.
That's going to be a fun conversation,
my umber-skinned wife sighed.
Is everything all right?
Narissa Kennefic's voice suddenly called out, and when I glanced up, I saw my mother-in-law's nervous expression.
You all appear as if you've seen a ghost or received bad news.
Not a ghost, but a demon, I replied. And when Nia's mother's eyebrows drew together, I elaborated further. It's sort of a long story, Lady Kennefic.
Luckily I have all of the time in the world,
Narissa countered.
Please tell me what's going on.
I glanced over at Nia, and the ashen-haired elementalist offered me a single nod. So, with her blessing, we explained the situation to Narissa. With each added detail, her lips parted further, until her jaw was practically on the floor. I know it's a major shock, I tried to soothe her. Trust me, we weren't expecting it either.
Has your father been informed of this yet?
Narissa asked Nia.
Arwen is sending off correspondence this morning, her daughter confirmed. I don't know how soon he'll be back from Hartmire, but she's at least leaving word for him when he's available. If he doesn't arrive in a timely manner, I think your father would approve of whatever decision you'd think is best.
Narissa addressed each of us.
He trusts each of your judgments, and when it comes to matters like this, you need to consider the good of the realm. This dream and the demon's threat have a sense of urgency about them, and if you wait... Oh, I wonder what could happen to the realm.
We had similar thoughts. I agreed with my mother-in-law, and I gave her an earnest smile. We're going to try and get in touch with Galahar. If we can't receive any type of correspondence, we'll likely go ahead with the mission. I'm just hoping we can get in touch with him beforehand.
Hopefully Miss Hamner can reach him,
Narissa replied, and then a sigh rose up from her chest.
Mecha, how awful. I knew things would be getting worse, but I had no idea they'd be this bad this quickly.
That's usually how these things go, I shrugged. All we can do is try to adapt and then overcome.
So what are your plans in the meantime?
Nia's mother wondered as she crossed into the room. We'll be getting ready and then leaving soon, I said. Time is of the essence and we can't afford to linger for too much longer.
Absolutely,
Narissa agreed with me. And then she peered around at the children.
Well, let's get the children fed. And then I'll start preparing a meal for everyone to enjoy before you leave.
Oh, Mother, that's so sweet of you.
Nia smiled at her.
It's the least I can do,
Narissa insisted. We set forth immediately and attended to each of the babies. Luckily, they were all super cooperative, so the task didn't take too long. Once everyone had left the room, I returned to the nursery and stood amongst the many cribs and beds of my children. While I'd said goodnight to my sons and daughters with the rest of my family, I needed another moment to really connect with my children. Being a guardian was the greatest honor a mage could attain, but the title meant nothing in comparison to being a father, as ridiculous as it might sound to others. I sat down in one of the rocking chairs at the far end of the room, folded my hands in my lap, and considered what I wanted to say. None of them would have any idea what I was saying, but I wanted this set of words to be impactful in case the mission went awry. I know we've already said goodnight once today, but there's something I wanted to say to all of you on my own. I began in a quiet tone, and I immediately had to fight back my emotions as I addressed my children. Your moms and I are going on a trip to somewhere far away, even further than we've ever gone before. We've been on a lot of missions that were incredibly important, but this one is even more important than any of those. In fact, it's probably the most important one we'll ever go on. I wish I could explain to you how bad things are out there, but even if I could, I don't think I'd want to. I know I'm rambling and none of this makes any sense to you. I just really needed you guys to know everything I do for you, and the future you're going to inherit when I'm gone. I want to leave the world a better place for each of you, so you can pass along a perfect world for your children, and so on and so forth. One day I'll tell you about how we kicked some demon butt and saved the world from evil, but for now, I'll say this. I love each of you. So very, very much. Lara let out a soft coo, which made Daphne and Oliver giggle, and when Milo stirred, the sound made Nicholas do the same. The only one who remained asleep was Nessa, and I watched in wonder as her eyelids fluttered while she dreamed. I'd been gifted with so many perfect children, and I couldn't believe I was about to add two more to my family with Ashla and Arwen, another with Sarah, and eight more with the other Arkans. The thought should have overwhelmed me, but as I stared down at my babies, all I could feel was joy and excitement. Battling monsters and ancient enemies was fun and all, but what I was truly looking forward to was spending time with my children and learning to be the best father I could be. This is what I was fighting for, a better world for me and my family. Every sacrifice, every wound, it was all for them, and I vowed to defeat my enemy as soon as I could. I gave the babies one last wave, stepped out of the nursery, and made my way to Arwen's room, where we'd all decided to get ready for our mission. My friends and family all wore similarly stressed expressions, and I suppressed my urge to join them in panic. I reminded myself of the calm front I needed to present, and managed to smile. But before I could say something encouraging, a blaring noise rang out that sent a chill up my spine.
"What the fuck is that?"
Layla shouted as she threw her hands over her ears.
"What's going on?"
Syra chimed in as she crossed over to the window and peered outside, and the dark-skinned summoner's neck craned around as she tried to find whatever was happening.
"It's the rift alarm, the same one they used when Gandor broke into the Enclave," I realized, and as the words left my lips, the gravity of the situation hit me completely. The incoming herd of monsters had finally arrived in Varlae.